Richard Pryor was in a lot of great movies. Also, he was in The Toy. We vetoed driving Miss Daisy to get here, and I think things got more problematic. Still, it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, it's the number one movie in America. Main episode. We don't know what to call the difference between
the big show.
Yes.
We started with minisodes, and then you know, Robin and I kept talking, and they quickly became no longer mini. So in the lane, and then the off ramp. I don't know. We need some. Tweet us with a clever movie metaphor for the thing, and then the other thing. But this is where I say our names. I'm here with two Zamundan royal guards, let's say. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Rose petals, rose petals, rose petals.
And Camila Adams.
Your queen!
The narrative on Coming to America, Coming the Number Two America, kind of went, it came out and everyone was like, ugh. And then everyone went, yeah, you know what, fine. We had a good time. It ate up a couple hours in this life we're living right now. Right. Sure, knock yourself up.
It's like, I don't understand how anybody could be too critical of the part two. Like what you're saying, like the timing in which it came out. It's on Amazon Prime. It's like no one was asking you to go to a movie theater to watch it. It's like, you know, it kind of knew what it was coming in. So it's like, yeah, we can hang out if you want for a couple hours. So I was happy with it.
I think it's also easier to have fond feelings about when you're not actively watching it.
Right. I think people would have liked it less if they had to go to the movie theater. I think if it were like, that cost $11 right. and I had to go to a place?
Right.
But at home, sure. But that was only half of our episode. The real episode was about the original Coming the Word to America, which I should announce is now our 10th place overall movie on the big charts.
Wow.
Coming to America just cracked the top 10. It was actually tied with Toy Story 4. Both Coming to America and Toy Story 4 earned an 80 and two-thirds. The tiebreaker, the higher individual scorer, is the 89 that Robin gave Coming to America. So your childhood feelings launched it into the top 10.
But 7 You're is welcome. Still number 7, right?
7 is still 7th. Both words spelled with the number 7 in the middle. Coming to America finishes just behind Aliens, plural. 9th place, 82 and a third. As a reminder, our top 3, which are just going to get harder and harder to touch. Alien is first, 89 and a half. Pulp Fiction is second at 88. And Speed is third, 87 and two thirds. Will something dethrone them? Will something knock 7 out of 7th one day? Probably won't be The Toy. Yeah, hey, what are your initial takes?
I have complicated feelings about it. I'm like, seriously, I'm really like struggling just to come up with a score.
I also did not write a score down because how?
I also did it.
Score such a thing.
Like I'm at odds with myself. Like it's there's a lot of back and forth.
I do want to report. I think last week I was like, I will find out while I'm watching it if I've seen it before. I still don't know. I've definitely never watched the whole thing. But there were parts where they were riding around in their power wheels where I was like, this feels really familiar. So I think that maybe I saw it in pieces when I was really little.
Right. You're probably changing channels or something. Or
right.
It was one of those things. I definitely had not seen it in its entirety. And I was also realizing that the only thing I'd ever really watched Richard Pryor in, aside from any stand-up, was The Wiz. Like, I don't think I've ever actually seen, I definitely haven't seen him this much on screen at a time. So that was another thing for me to get used to. But actually, I was pleasantly surprised by his performance.
I think he's delightful.
Yeah.
I think his charm is activated here. I think he is doing the best he possibly can.
Right.
Yeah. I'll spoil the one fact, is that the toy was not well received critically. Mm. And that had more, can you pick up Peanut growling in the background? Peanut, it's really mm-hmm. okay.
Yeah.
Does Peanut really like the toy and he's just upset about this naysaying?
Peanut is such an 80s comedy fan, you know, anything lighthearted. No, he's I opened the front window and now it's the exciting new world of sounds that he can hear. Peanut, it's okay. What did I just say? The toy was not well received critically. The quote from the New York Times, Vincent Canby reviewing, "My mind wasn't simply wandering during the film. It was ricocheting between the screen and the exit sign." The bad notices said it was like dull and unfunny. And I didn't find it unfunny or not amusing. I just found that hard to get to past how, you know, icky it feels.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree.
I don't think this movie isn't funny. I think it's, you know, a middling comedy that has an albatross around its neck.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. There were moments that I found pretty damn funny, and I really wish I could remember what it was, but there was one point that Dan and I were both like laughing our asses off like super loud, and we missed like 10 minutes of the movie because we were laughing so deeply and so hard about it. I don't remember
was
what it was.
Was it the inflatable wheel? Because no. That got me.
Oh, yeah. We've been also through too much bit? Together, Wonder Wheel.
The table bit got me.
The table bit.
Which table was... bit?
Early on, before the main premise comes in, when he is serving lunch,
oh,
and Jackie Gleason pulls the table with like 15 people sitting at it, and Richard Pryor's like, "Oh well, you just made it so everyone else can't eat, so I'm gonna pull the table back to them."
Yes,
it becomes a power struggle.
I definitely liked the entire scene in the aerobics room, ending with the aerobics people chanting "Get a job, Adam!" like that. There's humor. It's fun. Well, let's tell you what the toy is about. If you don't know, let's continue with a 60-second recap of the film. Here to tell you what goes on is Robin Hitchcock. And go.
Richard Pryor plays Jack Brown, a down on his luck writer who will lose his home unless he quickly comes to money or a job. He takes a job as a cleaning lady for a company owned by U.S. Bates. He's cleaning a window display in Bates' department store when Bates' son, Eric, is told he can have whatever toy he wants from the store. And after some inflatable hamster wheel hijinks, Eric says he wants to buy Jack. Ned Beatty and the other employees are like, despite our best efforts, that is illegal. But Eric understands that as a child, or Eric already understands as a child that laws don't apply to him because he is rich. He is such a little shit, he makes Kevin from Home Alone seem like an angel, but Jack and Eric slowly become friends, and they expose U.S. Bates as an evil dude and stop him from blackmailing a senator. And then Jack saves Bates from drowning. Bates gives him a real job. Eric goes back to boarding school. And then another person is like, "Oh, you want to be my son's toy?" And so he runs off into the sunset. I know I didn't get it under a minute because I kept stumbling.
No, you did. You're still under a minute. Your apology is under a minute. It was about 51 seconds. So this movie stars a young Eric Trump as, no, it was weird. Like that attitude and a kid named Eric. I was like, right. When you lay it all out like that, it doesn't sound better.
No. And I was also found myself comparing Eric to Kevin from Home Alone.
He is.
Well, much less charming. Keep talking while I make Peanut stop making noise.
Okay.
But go on amongst yourselves.
The thing is, like, obviously I also thought of Kevin because it's like, how is this child? Like, how am I supposed to care about this monster child? But he is different than Kevin because he's like, Kevin is an asshole. This kid is on another level of...
He's
just
maniacal.
Sinister.
Yeah, there's levels. Like, he's like for real, Kevin does a lot of did a lot of property damage and was just like a real smart mouth. But this one, he had like, there were levels of his maniacal behavior, and he was like plotting and planning a lot of things. Like, he was in for the long haul for a lot of his shit. So.
And just his true awareness that consequences don't exist for him is chilling.
Right. I'm Eric Bates. This is what I can do. What I want, I can do what I want. Like,
you know who my father is.
Yeah,
I don't mean to, you know, expose the fact that I'm not an adult, but I laughed at Master Bates, and oh, then I too. Laughed at Richard Pryor laughing at Master Bates.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's there.
I mean, it the fact that the kid is not written to be likable, and then the poor young man, I'm sorry, does not help. Like, the young actor is not charming in any way either.
No. Now, and do you have his stats in the Faxy segment? Because
I left it out, but Scott Schwartz was a child star. I believe this was his debut. He's in A Christmas Story. He's Flick in A Christmas Story. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you know, after it didn't really work out for him, he went on ahead into pornography. So that's good.
Like, a lot of it. Like...
Yeah.
Like, holy crap. Lot of it. Like, at some point in like the 90s, he was like, you know what? I'm going this route. And it's just because when I went to look him up on IMDb, and then like everything in the more recent years are, you know, gangbang this or whatever, part 36 or something. I'm like, huh?
Holy crap.
Yeah.
First of all, people's porn titles end up on IMDb.
Yeah, dude. I had no idea. I had no idea.
I did not know that, which feels like something I should know. Wow.
Right.
And also, that actor was like 14 when he was playing this 9-year-old.
Very, very young.
Tiny.
But I mean, good for, you know, we assume like, oh, troubled, marginally talented child actress. She's probably going to end up doing porn. It's good to see that Scott Schwartz flipped the script.
Right.
And that young, marginally talented child male actors can do it as well. And that's nice.
And apparently find success, because he kept coming back.
Mm-hmm.
He kept coming and coming.
Yeah, see, we're not. What a way to lead into the Faxy segment. The Toy was released December 10th, 1982. It was the 18th number one movie of the year. That is a low total. Not incredibly low for the 70s and 80s. You know, there were not nearly as many number ones earlier on in our time period. But only 19 total number one movies is very low. That's because the year was completely dominated by E.T. E.T. won 16 different weekends, and most of them were non-consecutive. Something would win one, and then E.T. would come back and win the next two, and then something else would win one, and E.T. would win another one. The Toy was just such a case. E.T. had won the previous two weekends. Incidentally, the weekend immediately before The Toy's release, E.T. won with $2.4 million. It was E.T.'s 25th weekend in release. That was the lowest grossing number one movie in America until COVID hit. $2.4 million was the low mark until sometime in March of 2020.
Wow.
Then The Toy came out, won its opening weekend with $6.3 million, and that was actually a loaded weekend. The next two spots were also debuts. Airplane 2 debuted in second. 48 Hours debuted in third. And in very limited release that weekend, Gandhi and Sophie's Choice both debuted. So, lots going on. The Toy fell to second the following weekend when Tootsie was released. Tootsie won the rest of the year. The Toy did manage to hold off Dark Crystal, which was debuting that second weekend. Dark Crystal debuted in third. The Toy held pretty well. 8 weeks in the top 10, $47.1 million. That is 14th overall for 1982. Among the movies that The Toy outgrossed was Richard Pryor Live on the Sunset Strip, which finished 20th overall for the year, with $36.2 million, also a number one movie in America. In spite of the fact that it was not well received critically, we talked about that. Goes without saying, this was a big stretch of time for the director of this film, Richard Donner. I did not know this was a Richard Donner movie until the opening credits rolled.
Me neither.
But this is his busiest period. Superman in 1978, Inside Moves in 1980, The Toy in 82, Goonies and Lady Hawk both in 85, and Lethal Weapon in 87.
Wow.
So with the exception of Inside Moves, he was really only generating hits. Hey, Tony Goldwyn. I see what you did here, because the other thing that was going on for Richard Donner, he had started making Superman 2. There was a troubled production of this film featuring Superman.
What?
Richard Donner left this film featuring Superman midstream, leading to another director coming in and producing a finished product that divided the fan base. And fans really wanted to see the Richard Donner cut, which was eventually released.
Look at Tony be knowing stuff, man.
He's amazing.
Tony's amazing. I'm making that shirt.
Please do. I will buy it.
Yeah. You'll sell at least three of them. Finally, the toy is a remake. I think I mentioned this when we drew it. Le Jouet was released in 1976 in France, so a pretty quick remake. That's by director slash screenwriter Francis Weber, who has 8 movies. He's a French filmmaker primarily. He has made some movies in the U.S. He has made 8 comedies that were then remade in the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only so weird.
And this is what I wrote when I was writing my little column about the toy this week. This keeps happening, even though they don't work. Like, the only one that is an unmitigated hit is The Birdcage.
Yes.
The Birdcage is based on his French film version of La Cage aux Folles, which is adapted from a play, so it's not, and an opera before that, so it's not his original idea. The rest... The toy is probably the most successful. Other than that, Dinner for Schmucks is one of his, not a great movie. The Man with One Red Shoe, Three Fugitives, Buddy Buddy, Father's Day with Robin Williams and Billy Crystal. I mean, the toy was kind of a hit. Dinner for Schmucks was kind of a hit. 5 of the 8 of these were utter failures. Yeah. And people kept remaking his movies in America for like 25 years. So, okay, good for you.
I really like The Man with One Red Shoe, but I also have not seen it since I was a child. Child Robin loved that movie.
So, thus ends the Faxy segment, transitioning into this question. Is that what's going on here? Is this just like the French sense of humor translated to an American film? And running smack into a racial element that was not in the original film. In the original film, everybody's white. It's
okay,
France.
That's what I was going to ask.
I assure you, there are people who are not white in France.
I know there are people who are not white. That's reductive. But especially in French film in the 1970s.
Right.
It's just, you know, one guy was quirky and the other was normal. You know, that is the amount of difference you would get in this comedy. So it feels like they remade this movie. Some of the humor translates, some of it doesn't. But they were casting it and said, oh, Richard Pryor. And instead of going, wait a minute, are we going to, they'll be like, well, we'll just make some references to it. It's fine.
I think that they leaned in. Like, right. This movie does not have to be set in Louisiana. This movie does not have to be lousy with Confederate flags.
Right.
And I think that they thought it was funny. And maybe they're right. If in 1982, for Ned Beatty and all the other guys to be like, this is illegal. Right. Like, we don't really want it to be, but it is. You know what I mean? That's not funny in 2021.
Right.
But maybe they thought it was in 82.
I was kind of thinking that they did what they were going to do with what it was. And I feel like bringing Richard Pryor, I don't know how much say, if any, he had on any of the dialogue that he spoke. But to me, it felt like, yeah, they were kind of shining a light on how terrible this was and how problematic this could be. But it was also like, there was something in it, like, it was like there was a hope that Richard Pryor was going to be delivering this message, or that there was this underlying message that was going to be put on here of that, like, yes, this Ned Beatty and them were like, you know, it's legal, we can't do that, Eric is all, I can do what I want, and Richard Pryor is, you know, making statements throughout, or Jack is making statements throughout, talking about, you know, I can't be bought, I'm not a, you know, slavery is over, this, that, and the other, and, you know, and there's a lot of things, there's a lot of references that he makes, and a lot of things about racial inequality that he points out throughout the film. So it's like they were trying to, this was almost two different films. Like, this film couldn't really decide what it wanted to be, or nobody, like, I feel like there were probably a lot of rewrites, and and there was probably some a lot of discussion during editing, or there was another version that Richard Pryor or critics were like, this is probably way too fucking racist, so we're gonna have to pull it back some. So, you know, I there's something that's not quite curling over where this movie is concerned. Which is why
I love
I'm,
that expression.
I'm, which is why mm-hmm. I'm still just like out of sorts about it. Like I'm just like, I don't know what to give it because
right.
I enjoyed certain parts of it, but the whole Same. Premise is just like, why?
One of the things that doesn't work is that no one really learns anything.
No.
Right.
Like the kid just continues to think that he gets whatever he wants.
Right.
And I guess the thing that he learns is that his father loves him, which is only going to make things worse.
and I think that was, and it's somewhere like towards the end, like the third act of the movie that kind of was like, oh yeah, that was the point of this. We wanted to make Eric and his father have a relationship. We wanted that relationship to build. And it's like, y'all already wasted like, you know, 90 minutes of this movie. Like it's too far. You can't just bring this in last minute and be like, oh yeah, it's about father and son love.
You're so right. It comes out of nowhere. And then also, don't they think that maybe it should, the lesson of the film should be you can't own people?
Right. Yeah. So it's just like, no, nobody really. I don't think there were enough production meetings about how this movie was supposed to go. Like, what story are we telling?
Right.
I know that, you know, as with any time we do an 80s movie, there will be people who are like, what? That's the beloved thing. I grew up, I saw that on Comedy Central every Tuesday for a year. It came on at 1 o'clock. I just kept watching it, you know. But Even if it were not for all of this, we wouldn't be talking about, you know, an unfettered comedy classic here. It's good because there are enough bits that make it good, and because Richard Pryor is hilarious and knows what to do with anything. Mm-hmm. And Jackie Gleason, while absolutely not performing at his full powers, you know, can't not be funny when his dominoes fall down over and over again.
Right.
Like, the face he's going to make is going to be hilarious every time that happens. But it's not, you know, our friend John Hancock, who, you know, we don't need to advertise his life to the world, but our friend John Hancock is constantly making like March Madness style brackets on Facebook. And he's got an 80s one going, 80s movies, 80s comedies one going right now. And Caddyshack came up today. And people lose their shit for Caddyshack.
That movie sucks.
Caddyshack.
I've never seen it.
Caddyshack is funny enough. It's a collection of bits, some of which work, and nothing at all besides. It's no kind of a movie. It's just an excuse to have some fun. Mm. That's what the toy would be. And then you add this big problem on top of it. Right. So
I agree. I feel like Jackie Gleason was kind of wasted in this movie. Like, it could have been anybody. Mm-hmm. And it was just because it's kind of a one-off in trying to do some research and trying to find out if his wife was Anna Faris's mom.
Like, literally, she is 1982 Anna Faris. It is so weird and like great.
Right.
I love her.
Right. But it's not. But I found out that actress is from Toledo, Ohio, my hometown, which is not something.
I thought she does a lot of voice work, which makes sense.
Gotcha.
Given her amazing voice.
Yeah.
No, she's delightful.
Yes.
And her name is Fancy, which is very funny.
Gave me new hair and new boobs.
And her boobs are ridiculous.
Yes. Like, insert 80s movie, insert boob joke here. Like her on the exercise thing, the shaky shaky.
But how do they do it?
Well, I think we can probably rate the toy, even though none of us came in with a number, so we're just tossing things out and hoping it ends up averaging out right. I'm going to give it a 47. I started at 44. I added 2 for swearing underwater, which will be funny every time, and 1 because I really want to drive that little car down those stairs. So 47 is my score.
The part where he's before anything, where he's riding a bike to get to the jobs office, and like he truly does not understand how traffic works.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
That got me. All right, I'm gonna go 50 because right. I feel like that's a good way to handle. I cannot decide. I enjoyed watching this. I don't recommend it.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was too, but I'm gonna give it 6 more points. I'm gonna give it 56 because of several little bits and moments and whatever that was. I can't remember what it was that set us off to laughter. I will remember it at some point and come back with it. And also the old butler.
Who constantly has a martini.
Yes, that is my dude. I don't I don't know who he is or what he's about, but his snide comments under breath and his fucking, it's like I don't know. I'm drunk. His attitude. That's my dude. So 56.
Well, that averages out to 51, and yeah, we did it, because that means we're calling you good, but you're on notice.
Right.
You're getting off easy. 51 is the overall score for the toy. To the bingo card, I think we can safely cross off bad age gap, can't we?
Yes.
Yes. You might have to take a pause. I think I left mine downstairs.
I also did not load mine, but there, if memory serves, that means I have a bingo.
I'm here. All right, so.
Well, bad age gap is crossed off. How about many stairs? Does the car going down the flight of stairs constitute a many stairs scene?
Walks
Camille?
Up. Character walks up several car flights.
Walks up many stairs. But yeah, with bad age gap, Robin, do you have it pulled up?
I don't, but I really think I have a bingo, and I know we're on a time crunch.
Let's just say you do. Let's because say you I do, yes. Do. Bingo,
you do too?
I have a bingo.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
All right.
Well, that's another two-way bingo.
Ooh.
Camila is a bingo queen, and she has ruled that simultaneous bingo means that we will have another viewer/listener/podcaster's choice episode,
which I love. So
good, I'm glad.
Yeah, we might as well. I mean, they're a lot of fun. There's no reason to be like, oh, it hasn't been long enough since the last one. Let's have
we
a
make
good
the
time.
Rules. Yeah, and if we are out of line, Tony will punish us.
Yes,
exactly. So next week you'll hear whatever we draw at the end of this episode, and listen to another movie draft. We love the movie draft. So that's coming up. Before we draw, though, it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. What things did everybody watch?
I finished watching Alan versus Pharaoh.
That's, me too.
And just, I'm angry at the whole world, basically.
Yep, me too.
And I was really close to, I haven't done it yet, but my question is like, you know, okay, HBO, you want to pretend like this is going to make a difference, or you give a shit or whatnot about Dylan, this problem, but how many Woody Allen movies are on HBO right now?
Ooh, there at least used to be some.
Right. I mean, I haven't looked, but that's a that's a question that I have. I keep getting ready to do the search, but it takes too much to load up the app and everything. I just like, never mind.
That is a very good point, Camila. I think that the main thing of the last episode that I liked / left me angry is how much they document other people in Hollywood continuing to be complicit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I'm like, I can't believe that we didn't get a rush. Like, where is ScarJo? Is she under a rock, or is she just that bad of a person? I think it might be she's just that bad of a person.
And I honestly feel like she had to fuck him in order to get that role. I mean, not to say nothing against her and her abilities as an actress, but I think that she had to do some stuff.
No.
Yeah.
Speaking of HBO documentaries, I watched the first two episodes of the QAnon documentary. Do not recommend. It is clearly one of those Icarus situations where some dumb white guy was like, I'm going to make a movie. And then, oops, I stumbled upon a more interesting story, because he was originally going to make a movie about limits on free speech on the internet.
Mm.
So like, and that's how he got all this access. Anyway, don't watch it. Not worth it. Gonna find a different cult documentary to enjoy.
I know, damn it. Doesn't that suck when you start one and you're like, yeah, this is, oh man, this is bullshit.
Yes!
Anything else, Robin?
Nope.
Well, you watched Justice League, and that took several weeks of your life.
Yes, which you all heard about last week in the bonus episode.
Spoiler, we just recorded it yesterday as we're recording. So, I give a very qualified recommendation to nobody. The Bob Odenkirk, John Wick thing. look, if you turn your brain right off and actively resist the urge to think about what's being presented, it's a, you know, a very slickly produced action movie. Bob Odenkirk's great, and the fight scenes are tremendous, and it can be a good time. There are so, I mean, we always talk about, oh, movies love the redemptive power of violence. This movie worships the redemptive power of violence. This movie, like, is absolutely a, this is clearly by a guy. The only other feature from this director, whose name I forget, is Hardcore Henry, that first-person action movie, the action movie that was all in first-person perspective and was hyper-violent a couple of years ago, which was also really depraved. I mean, this is a guy, this is clearly one of those guys that thinks that, that legitimately thinks that every human being is just waiting for an excuse to snap and kill everyone around them for good, for a good cause. Yeah. We're all just going through life waiting for somebody to try us so we can be, yeah. Don't think about it. If you want to watch nobody, you know, good punching and Bob Odenkirk, go for it. Don't be thinking. A much less, a wholehearted recommendation to unlikely hit Slacks, the horror movie on Shudder about the killer pair of pants.
And how do you spell Slacks?
That's S-L-A-X-X.
Of course, for those, of course, of course.
Googling at home.
I would really like there to be a mashup. I haven't seen Slacks, but I would like there to be a mashup between this and the traveling pants of the Sisterhood or whatever.
Sisterhood of the Murderous Pants.
Yes. Traveling Murderous Pants.
Traveling yeah, they're on the road. It's, listen, this one started on third base. It's about a pair of murderous pants. It's 77 minutes long. Oh. As long as I show up, the pants kill some people, and we go home, it was going to work. The surprise was, it's good. It's a pretty darn good movie. Like, it has a little commentary about consumerism and, you know, performative wokeness in ethical sourcing. And it has some laughs and it has some good performance. None of that matters. The pants kill people, and it's really good when the pants kill people. So everything else is gravy. But this is at 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was at 100 through yesterday. So,
Where is it? Where's it screaming?
It's on Shudder. This is another Shudder exclusive. Nice. If it were not if I've never convinced you until now to try to get that Shudder free trial, killer pants. What more do you need?
And that would, it'd be cool if anybody out there knows a way for us to get a Shudder sponsorship. That'd be great.
Yeah. We clearly are a pro Shudder podcast. Right.
With a little bit of, I want to broach this topic without getting too deep because it's a can of worms. Gremlins. Is that a good movie?
Haven't seen it since my youth.
Last time I watched it, it was probably about 6 or 7 years ago. I don't particularly care for it myself. I think the creatures are just, it's too much.
I will say Gremlins 2, The New Batch is a masterpiece.
Oh, that's what I hate that one even more.
It is a POMO classic. My friend Alex Reed called it
a POMO.
That's how I for postmodern, how I first heard postmodern referred to as POMO.
Mm-hmm. And so what brings this question to your mind?
I had a college English class where the teacher was obsessed with postmodernism and said POMO all the time. When we brought up the fact that one of the books we were reading specifically said in its text, this is not postmodernism, she said, yeah, so this one's post-postmodern. And we went, po-pomo? It's po-pomo.
I feel like there's no easier way to be postmodern than to insist you're not postmodern.
Right? That one was for the English majors. Hey, Gremlins, like everything else, it was playing at the drive-in. Yeah. The first time I saw Gremlins, I was like, I don't know if I care, you know, whatever. And I was like, I'll go back and, you know, give it another shot. And the same thing again. I like that it has practical effects. There are, like when they're first going wild and tearing the town apart, it's fun for a little while. Mm-hmm. That sequence goes on 20 minutes too long.
Yeah.
I like the inventor father. the kid is a, or not the kid, the older teen protagonist is a nothing protagonist. Why did you bring Corey Feldman in and have him be a side character when he would have? Listen, Corey Feldman's here in this movie with Little Critters. He's the star.
Yeah.
Like, come on. This boy has a short window. We're right in it. Go.
Maybe it was one of those situations like with Halloween where he was busy and they had to go to his backyard to fill his scenes.
People love that movie so much, and like, yeah, if you grew up with it, that's it's like Goonies.
Right.
If you grew up with it, I get it, but it's just okay. Yeah. I don't know why there's, other than Gizmo being cute, I don't know why there's a cult around this movie.
And even Gizmo wears a little thin after a while. It's like, all right, we get it. Like, you're adorable. You're normal, and you just want your offspring to behave, but. It's light. Like, yeah, I'm not really into it. Like, it's not, I'm not actively against it, but I'm also not like, hey, let's put on Gremlins.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. And not to nitpick. So what are the rules of this world? Like, we just find a sentient, almost verbal creature that no one's ever heard of, and it's like, oh, it's a pet now. It's called a Mogwai. Yeah, don't get it wet. This is just a thing we're accepting. Come on. Come on.
The CDC had nothing to do, was not involved whatsoever. And so, and this thing, it was just hanging out in this guy's store all this time. And
yeah.
This was his boy. Like, this was his pet. Or he was mistreating it and just had him in a box on the shelf somewhere. So either way.
Right. So, what's the line between pet and merchandise?
Right. Exactly. And if he was like your pet and your boy, your compadre, is your cool was just selling him off to some rando dude who's like, I need to buy a gift so my son will love me. Like, I know it's bizarre.
Yeah, come at me, Gremlins fans, or don't. I don't care. That's the thing. Same with Goonies. You can come at me or not. I don't care enough to defend my position.
I said what I said.
Anyway. Yeah, right. Let's draw a movie. We will do another movie draft next week, but for now, we leave it up to fate to decide. And what fate says is, why don't you guys watch Apocalypto, Mel Gibson's bizarre Native American hyperviolent thing.
Oh, heavens.
Oh, man, that one is a time and a half. I'll do it, but no good can come of this.
This looks like I'm going to be mad. This just looks like a bad movie. I don't know.
It's free on Prime.
All right. It's free on Prime.
What is our veto situation?
I have no idea.
It's only the three key turn.
So, are we going to use our unanimous agreement veto to avoid watching like 15 human sacrifices and a muddled imperialism message? Or are we going to sail into this Bermuda Triangle of filmmaking?
I mean, I have to admit, I'm curious.
Oh, have you not seen it?
I have not seen this, no.
I have not seen it either. Yeah, it'll be an interesting conversation. Mel Gibson. Anything that's like, let's build as Mel Gibson's Apocalypto. I mean, it's...
But he's not on the screen at all, right?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No. He is not in the film.
He's just...
This is his follow-up to Passion of the Christ. This is his, you know, well, I don't have Jesus to kill anymore, so who else can I find? I don't know. I remember a lot of gore and a vaguely funny blowjob scene. That's my memory of Apocalypse.
All right.
Well, yeah. That sounds like quite the endorsement. So I'm going to go. We'll watch it.
All right, we're diving in.
Yeah,
it's free.
Let's see what happens there. But before we inch towards Mel Gibson with a combination of curiosity and terror. The Toy came out December 10th, 1982. What was the number one song in America when Richard Pryor rode that wonder wheel to the top?
I have a guess based on Camila's recent appearance on The Latchkey Kids, in which I believe she said that the Thriller music video premiered in early December 82.
I think it was 83.
Oh, well, there you go. So that I was going to guess Thriller, but there that goes. Goodbye. So I don't have a guess.
Rick Springfield.
No, never a bad guess. Not Rick Springfield. I have I would probably walk this back now, but at various points in my life, I have called this song the worst hit single of all time.
Abracadabra?
I love that. I mean, like, it's obviously not good, but I do love it.
If somehow you picture cheerleaders and Disney World at the same time.
Mickey.
Yeah.
Hasn't that been the answer for another episode of this show?
I thought so. Maybe she was probably number one for a while. That was a popular song.
Yeah.
Maybe she had like all of 82 was her thing.
I also like that song.
Me too.
It's a combination of like an undeniable drum beat and that 80s intonation where everything is said in a vaguely embarrassing way. It's like, what are you trying to prove with this over enunciation and
everything at all?
There's no word in that song. She doesn't sing the word heart. She says heart. Like, calm down.
Listen, I watch a bunch of old movies that are in transatlantic accents. Like,
right.
I'm into it.
I'm here for that song. I will
it's
never.
It's all yours.
I will never not bop to it.